We're on chapter 14.
Okay, that's what I thought. Cool. Now Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was inclined towards Absalom. Now remember, Absalom is now up north with his grandfather, who's a king up in that other kingdom up there, which a good pastor would know the name of. But anyway, he ran away to Grandpap because he had killed his brother, because his brother had raped his sister. So David is not having a... Well, it seems like as soon as Nathan spoke the words to him that the turmoil will not leave your house, it started. And it says, so Joab... Now, remember, Joab keeps showing up. Joab is a sly, conniving human being. You see little pictures, parts of Joab that you go... Maybe he's not a bad guy. And then you see other parts of him where he just, he's stirring up trouble. He's doing things that shouldn't be done. I believe, if I remember correctly, he is the king's nephew. He's David's nephew. I think it's his sister's kid. Him and his brother are two of the generals that run the army.
Is but, that who he sent, or he put the guy in the front lines?
That was, yep. Yeah, well, that's he's that guy. You know, he'll do whatever I tell him to do. And what they call a certain moral flexibility. In other words, I sure. What do you want me to do? I can do it because you want me to do it. It does. You know, there's no part of him that says I shouldn't do that. And I think he's also the guy that killed the other dude that, from the northern kingdom that killed his brother. Remember, there were three of them.
Right.
And yeah, okay. And David didn't want him killed, and Joab killed him. Okay. So Joab sent to Tekoa and brought a wise woman from there and said to her, please pretend to be a mourner and put on mourning garments now and do not anoint yourself with oil, but be like a woman who has been mourning for the dead many days. Then go to the king and speak to him in this manner. So Joab put the words in her mouth. And when the woman of Tekoa spoke to the king, she fell on her face to the ground and prostrated herself and said to him, help, O king. And the king said to her, what is your trouble? And she answered, truly, I am a widow, for my husband is dead. Your maidservant has two sons, but two of them are struggled in the field together, and there was no one to separate them. So the one struck the other and killed him. Now behold, my whole family has risen against your maidservant, and they said, hand over the one who struck his brother, that we may put him to death for the life of his brother whom he killed, and destroy the heir also. Thus they will extinguish my coal which is left, so as to leave my husband neither name nor remnant on the face of the earth. The king said to the woman, go to your house, and I will give you orders concerning you. So Joab concocts this story. He finds this woman who's a wise woman and is respected, and he tells her to go in and lie. If you hopefully you see the similarities between her casting this story and Nathan coming before David and casting a story. The whole point of this is to get an emotional response linked to a truth so that you get a response from the king that you want, so that you could say, aha, see what you said? Mm-hmm. And, of course, when Nathan did it, it was directly from the hand of God to expose David's sin. This is Joab's way of getting things done. So, and this is kind of risky for this woman. She's counting on the power of Joab to save her because if the king isn't happy about this lie. Once again, we saw that David could do whatever he wants to do to whomever he wants, whenever he wants to do it. I don't know what caused her to go do this, but she did. And David hears the story. So basically what it says is, my husband's dead. I have two sons. They're in the field. They fought. My one son killed the other. All I have left is this son. That's it. I will be destitute. My family name for my husband will be crushed. Now the rest of the family and everybody else wants to kill him because by law, he's a murderer. He's to be put to death. So she comes before the king with this made-up concocted story. Of course, we could see why this is, because Absalom had killed Amon. So what they're trying to do is get David to react to the almost the same... It's not the same situation. But they want David to respond in a way they go, well, look, if you'll do that for this woman's child, why won't you do this for your own? So... The woman of the coast said to the king, O my lord the king, the iniquity is on me and my father's house, but the king and his throne are guiltless. So the king said, whoever speaks to you, bring him to me, and he will not touch you anymore. So this is the second time David says, I'll take care of it. She says again. Then she said, please let the king remember the Lord your God, so that the avenger of blood will not continue to destroy. Otherwise, they will destroy my son. And he said, as the Lord lives, not one hair of your son shall fall to the ground. Then the woman said, please let your maidservant, that's the third time, let your maidservant speak a word to my lord the king. And he said, speak. The woman said, why then have you planned such a thing against the people of God? Okay, this is the dangerous part. This is the part where she turns it a little bit and says, for in speaking this word, the king is as one who is guilty, and that the king does not bring back his banished one. Speaking of Absalom. Because Absalom is still living up in the northern kingdom up there. For we will surely die, and will, like water spilled on the ground, which cannot be gathered up. Yet the king does not take away life, but plans ways so that the banished one will be not cast out from him. Now the reason I have come to speak this word to my lord the king is that the people have made me afraid. So your maidservant said, let me now speak to the king. Perhaps the king will perform the request of his maidservant. For the king will hear and deliver his maidservant from the hand of the man who would destroy both me and my sons from the inheritance of God. She's still clinging to her story, but in the middle of her story, she brings up Absalom. There's no doubt who she's talking about. And then she also brings the people in. Like, this is for the nation. Why are you doing this to the nation? But Absalom's a treasure. You know, why have you sent him away? We need him. You're not... David's old. Ammon was... Well, let's get out of the way. Ammon was the first in line. So you could also... I guess if you wanted to go there, you could think that Absalom actually killed two birds with one sword. He not only got a hold of the guy that raped his sister and then locked her out of the room, but also the guy who's sitting in front of him in the line to the throne. So... Here in Les Brom. There is one more in between them that I can't remember his name. We never hear from him again. He was mentioned a few chapters back where maybe one of Abigail's sons. Anyway, he's mentioned, and then nowhere in the scripture you heard from again. So we don't know if he died. We don't know if he just had no interest. Maybe he was a skateboarder. I don't know what, you know, like cheap butt, don't care. But we never hear another word about this son other than he was born. So he's obviously not an issue either. And Absalom, as we had saw, was extremely handsome. Once again, we've talked about that. That matters to people. I don't know why. He has the look. You know, everybody expects Absalom to... And I'm also assuming that most of the people have no issue with what Absalom did. You know, most guys would go, yep, had it coming. You know, Ammon got what he had coming. And wouldn't hold a grudge to Absalom no matter what. You know, dude's a creep, needed to be killed. Absalom killed him. But two times she said the people. You know, don't harm the people. In other words, you're hurting the nation by sending him away. It's not just this. And then she's still holding to her story. She brings it back about, well, my son. And he says, for the king will hear and deliver his maidservant from the hand of the man who will destroy both me and my sons from the inheritance of God. And it isn't destroy me too. If her son's gone, she's done. There really is no way. Here's how they take care of poor people. It's workfare. You're supposed to. You're only supposed to harvest what you can harvest in one pass. You're not supposed to. I'm trying to remember what all it was. You're not supposed to harvest a corner of a field. Those things are left for widows, orphans, and travelers. But they have to go get it. I mean, there it is. Go get it now. So what people would do, us being us, it's never defined what a corner is. So they would push a corner. You could tell the character of a man by how big his corners were. You know, if he really cared about people, he left a large size corner. Or he would just have his harvesters go so slow they didn't miss anything on the first pass. There was really nothing to garnish. The Book of Ruth is beautiful. This is all explained. You read the Book of Ruth, which is right before Judges, or after Judges, sorry. Before Samuel starts, and it has that beautiful explanation of the harvesters going out and Ruth harvesting for Naomi, following behind the harvesters. Ruth and Naomi are widows, and Boaz sees her and tells the guys to leave some extra for them. You know what I mean? It tells her, don't go anybody else's field, just stay in mine, because apparently these women were in danger. They're out there by themselves, and he says, stay here, we'll protect you. Yeah, beautiful little story, by the way. And it says, then your maidservant said, please let the word of my lord the king be comforting, as the angels of God, the angel of God, so is my lord the king to discern good and evil. I mean, women are cool. They know how to talk to men. You know, buttering them up straight up. You know, your words are like the angel of God. You know, and it's And you can discern good and evil. And it said, may the Lord God be with you. And of course, guys, let's go, okay. The king answered and said to the woman, please do not hide anything from me that I'm about to ask you. And the woman said, let my lord, the king, please speak. And the king said, is the hand of Joab with you in all this? And the woman replied, as your soul lives, may the Lord the king, my lord the king, no one can turn right or left or anything that my lord the king has spoken. Indeed, it was your servant Joab who commanded me, and it was he who put all these words in the mouth of your maidservant. In order to change the appearance of things, your servant Joab has done this thing. But my lord is wise, like the wisdom of the angel of God, to know all that is in the earth. The king said to Joab, and I'm sure this is a dramatic moment. He's been hornswoggled, but with good intentions. We'll say with good intentions. With Joab, you never really know, but I have no reason to doubt this woman's intentions. You know, that she's just doing what she's told to do, and I think she really thinks she's doing the right thing. But she's lying to the king. And then the king said to Joab, behold now, I will surely do this thing, and therefore bring back the young man Absalom. It works. There's no conversation between Joab and David, guy stuff. Yeah, okay, go get him. That was it. Joab fell on his face to the ground, prostrated himself, and blessed the king. And Joab said, today your servant knows that I have found favor in your sight, O my lord the king, and that the king has performed the request of his servant. So Joab arose, went to Geshur, and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. However, the king said, let him turn to his own house, and let him not see my face. So Absalom turned to his own house and did not see the king's face. Now in all of Israel, no one was as handsome as Absalom. So highly praised, from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no defect in him. When he cut his hair, the hair of his head, and it was at the end of every year that he cut it, for it was heavy on him, so he cut it, the weight of his hair, the head of his hair, was 200 shekels by the king's weight. I should know what that is, but I don't.
It's 3 pounds.
3 pounds, yeah. To Absalom were born 3 sons and 1 daughter, whose name was Tamar, which is his sister's name. She was a woman of beautiful appearance. Now Absalom lived 2 full years in Jerusalem and did not see the king's face. Okay, so he kills Amon. He goes north and lives up there for 2 years. Then he comes back and he lives in Jerusalem without seeing the king for, I think, would we just say 3 years?
2 years.
2 years, okay. So that's 4 years that we've got down already. It's been a long time. Then Absalom sent for Joab, and the king said he would not come. This is the second time, but he would not come. Okay. Absalom wants to see the king. He's been 2 years, hasn't seen dad. There's more than just seeing dad. It has to do with prestige. It has to do with being in the court. It has to do with political power. Absalom is a shrewd character. Remember how shrewd David was politically? He always knew the right thing to do and how to do it. Absalom does too, but with a little evil tint to it. Whereas David's was mostly pure. He did what he had to do for the right reasons. Absalom does what he wants to do for the wrong reasons. And he starts by wanting to see the king. And he says to Joab, Joab, I want to see the king. And Joab just doesn't even answer him. 2 times. Therefore he said to his servant, see Joab's field is next to mine, and he has barley there? Go set it on fire. So Absalom's servants set the field on fire. Then Joab arose, came to Absalom at his house, and said to him, why have your servants set my field on fire? Absalom answered Joab, behold, I sent for you, saying, come here, that I may send you to the king, and say, why have I come from Geshur? It would be better for me to still be there. Now therefore, let me see the king's face, and if there is iniquity in me, let him put me to death. So he tells him, look, dude, yeah, I called you twice, you didn't come, so I cut your crops on fire. Now you're here, here's what I want you to do. Joab is a bold person, but he's not bold enough to kill Absalom. I don't know if he can, but that would have been a major... He's smart enough to know that Absalom is the king's son. I don't kill him or burn his crops in retaliation. And what he says is, look, why am I here? He called me. I've been here 2 years. He hasn't seen me. Up there, I was in the court, you know, with Grandpap's place. I was somebody. Now he said, just in... Let's finish. What he says is, let's finish it. I'm either going to be with my dad or have him put me to death. Either way, don't care. I've had enough of this. So when Joab came to the king and told him, he called Absalom, and thus the king He came to the king and prostrated himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. David loves Absalom. I've got a son. I understand it. Yeah. I mean, he loves him all the way through. It gets a lot worse. The love never stops. Now it came about after this that Absalom provided for himself a chariot and horses and 50 men as runners before him. So as soon as he gets recognition from the king, as soon as he's allowed back into the court, and the people could see that he is in favor, that he's somebody, it also puts him, think about it, you're somebody that's living in Jerusalem, you're seeing him there, you start to think political, David's old, oh, Absalom's back in line. Solomon, who I'm assuming at this time is born, but would be very, very young, is sort of like an afterthought. He's like, eh. So Absalom is making a move. He's putting himself in a position where he's powerful. And he has these chariots and horses, and he has men running in front of him so that when people see him, he looks important. It's like a motorcade or an entourage is basically what it is. And he sets all this up. Absalom used to rise early and stand beside the way to the gate. And when any man had a suit to come before the king for judgment, Absalom would call to him and say, "From what city are you?" And they would say, "Your servant is from one of the tribes of Israel." Does anybody have anything other than Israel for verse 2? At the very last word. See, what he's trying to do, he put himself in between the king and judgment. He sat at the gate. The king should have people at the gate or himself or something delegating this judgment. Absalom just strolls in, and when people come by, he's grabbing them and saying, he's starting by being divisive. Where are you from? Now remember, David unified Israel from the south and the north. Remember, David was crowned at Hebron down south, Judah. That's David's people. This is also Absalom's people. Saul's people were all the northern kingdoms, Ephraim, Benjamin, and everything north. So what he's doing is, where are you from? And they're saying, from the tribes of Israel. That could be reference to the tribes of the north. Or he's just trying to find a way to create, I don't want to say misery loves company, but it's not even divide and conquer. It's just a sort of thing. Find out what problem they have and act like you're on their side. People are very good at this who are conniving. You know, they could really care less about your problem. They just want your support. After you get what you want, they'll forget you totally. This is politics 101, man. It's just how it's played. And he's very good. He's doing it out in public, in the open, and nobody seems to care. And Absalom would say to him, "See, your claims are good and right, but no man listens to you on the part of the king." So not only is he getting in on their good side, he's also putting down his dad. What he's saying is, there's no justice here. I'm the only one here to give you justice. David wouldn't give you justice. I will. Moreover, Absalom would say, "Oh, that one would appoint me judge in the land, that every man who has a suit or a cause could come to me, and I would give him justice." When a man came near to prostrate himself before him, he would put out his hand and take a hold of him and kiss him. So, not only is he judging, when somebody would come to honor him, he'd go, "Oh, no. You know, stand up. And he would, when they would, you know, try to show him honor, he wouldn't let them. He was acting like he was humble. He's really good at this. And when a man, okay, in this manner, Absalom dealt with all Israel who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole away the hearts of the men of Israel. Compare this to how David stole away the hearts of the people of Israel over Saul. David didn't do any of this stuff. David just went out and won battles, treated Saul with respect, never interloper, never try to supersede Saul's power, always treat Saul with respect. These are the two different ways it happens. You can lift yourself up, or God can lift you up. You lift yourself up, you're going to be humiliated in the end. It just doesn't work well.
When they said he came to the king for judgment, like, what would that
mean? My neighbor took my, my neighbor plowed my 3 acres in the corner and said it's his. Somebody has to settle this. Ultimately, it settles with the king. This goes all the way back to Moses. When Moses was judging Israel and they would come to all their problems, day and night he would be out for all his hours, and his father-in-law, Abner, I think it's Abner, said to him, Moses, what are you doing? You can't do this. You're going to die. You need to split this up. Find some wise men and let them, in other words, make a system. Let it work its way up, and like an appeal system almost. And I'm assuming that when Moses instituted that, that it's still in some sort of, I don't know this for a fact, but there's still some sort of process for this. Because if you remember, when David's son Solomon gets in, he's known for his wisdom. One of the stories that is just known about is him making such a judgment over the women who come in and argue over the child. That's my baby, no, that's my baby. And Solomon says, cut him in half. And then one mother says, okay. And the other one says, no, give him to her. And Solomon says, well, that's obviously her child. So Solomon is obviously still doing this sort of thing. You could say that maybe David's old. I don't know if he can't go down and do these things anymore or he's just neglecting it. Absalom should have never been able to put himself in that situation without somebody noticing it and saying to David, dude, this is what he's doing. Listen to what he's saying. Somebody somewhere should have been figuring this out. But when you become comfortable with what you have and you become self-indulgent, which is what comfort does to you, sometimes you just tend to forget what you should be doing. Because you're so wrapped up in what you want to do, you tend to forget what you should do. It happens to all
of us.
Here's
what it says in my Bible here. Because King David was busy with other matters or with wars and was also aging, many matters were left unresolved, building a deep feeling of resentment among the people.
Yeah. And yeah, all of the above. It just wasn't getting dealt with. Absalom's smart enough to see his opportunity and step in. And you know what? He may even stepped in and David may have been glad he did. You know, like, well, that's one more thing I don't have to deal with these now, but without paying attention. Right. Ultimately, he's responsible. King's not a good job. You're responsible for everything. People die if you're wrong, you know? Okay. Now, it came about at the end of 40 years. Now, anybody else in verse 7, what do you have for it came about at the end of 40 years?
It says, see the marginal reference.
Right.
The better reading is 4,
yes.
Because the number 40 could refer neither to the age of,
yes,
Absalom, blah, blah, blah.
Josephus calls it 4. It's just a mistranslation that when they translated it, they made it 40. There's no number. They can't think of any way that 40 makes any sense here. But 4 makes perfect sense. 2 years up there, 2 years back. Until he starts acting again, until he goes before the king. So 4 years had passed. 4 makes sense. 4 nobody can figure out. It really doesn't matter. But just so you know, if you're sitting there wondering, go, what's the 40 years? Josephus, who is the guy who most of this stuff is brought from, the Jewish historian, he calls it 4. Almost everybody that was of the great Jewish writers calls it 4. They get it. It was us who made this 40. Okay. Absalom said to the king, please let me go and pay my vow, which I have vowed to the Lord in Hebron. Now, the last time Absalom said, let me go do something, it didn't work out so well. He killed his brother. But what he's saying to him is, and okay, this is really hardcore bad stuff. You want to do something evil, and you evoke God in it. Let me go do something spiritual. He has no intention of going to anything spiritual. But he knows that this will mean something to David. He knows it'll lift David's heart because my son wants to go do something spiritual. Sure, son. It gets his guard down. He's happy. It's one of these things like, great, thanks, God. My kid's being spiritual. It's not even close to that. And so there is no hesitation on David's part. He said, let me go to Hebron. Now remember, Hebron is Judah. This is hometown for... Hebron is where Absalom was born. Absalom would have connections there. It's a place of power for him and his family. It is the southern kingdom. I'm not sure if the vow is a lie. Doesn't matter. He's using it for evil purposes. God's never happy about that. For your servant vowed a vow while I was living in Geshur in Aram, saying, if the Lord shall indeed bring me back to Jerusalem, I will serve the Lord. They don't really say what to serve the Lord is. It could be even... Remember we talked about a Nazirite? the vow of a Nazarite. He could be going down there. What he could be saying is, I'm going to go down to be a Nazarite for a set period of time, 30 days or something. Shave my hair. I won't eat wine. I won't drink wine. I won't touch anything dead. All the things a Nazarite would do. And remember, the Nazarites were John the Baptist, lifelong, and Samuel, and another one.
Samson.
Yeah, from birth. They were Nazarites from birth. But most people that were Nazarites, you know, it was like a set period of time, 30 days, you know, something like that. Could be what they're talking about. The king said to him, go, be in peace. So he arose and went to Hebron. But Absalom sent spies throughout the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, Absalom is king in Hebron. He's already conniving. What he's saying is, I'm going to go down there, I'm going to gather my support, and I guess the way of sending a cell phone or a text message was trumpets. It'll be that signal. It said, the 200 men went from Absalom to Jerusalem who were invited and were innocent, and they did not know anything. See, what he's doing is he's entering into... Remember, he has these guys running in front of him, and he has these chariots. He doesn't tell them, I'm going down there to serve a vow. He comes down there with this entourage and with these 200 men that are pretty prominent men, and they're coming along with him. It looks like he's doing something very important. It looks like he's doing something political. He's got this mass of people coming with him, coming into Hebron. And then Absalom sent for Ahithophel. Am I saying that? Ahithophel. Yeah, anyway. Well, this is Bathsheba's grandfather. Okay, so this dude has an axe to grind. Remember, David had an adulterous affair with his granddaughter and killed his granddaughter's husband. The Gileonite, David's counselor. For all these years, this guy is extremely wise. Even after David did what he did, he stayed at David's side and had been a wise counselor. An advisor, secretary of state, whatever, I don't even know what we would call it now, but a very important guy. And so he comes in with all these people, and then he sends for this really important guy to come with him, this political guy from the city of Gilo. And while he was offering the sacrifices, and the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. By the way, I wrote it down. Chileab is the guy, the kid that disappears, that was next in line. Never another thing heard about him. Okay. So, the people, Absalom's been building his own case. He's been lifting himself up. He's been endearing himself to the people. Every time this happens, every time things turn, there's always people who would tell you, I'll give you what you want. The Nazis did it. The Nazi party, people didn't care what they were doing. They told me, I'm getting what I want. I don't care what you do to other people. I'm getting what I want. And it, look what just happened in Europe. Just this week, you know, the austerity measures didn't work, so they kicked everybody out and we're putting somebody else in. Neo-Nazis are getting elected because they're saying, we'll give you what you want. Things are so bad and people are getting desperate. People are saying, I don't care what title you get. Are you giving me what I want? I don't care what the rest you are offering. If that's somebody else's problem, it's somebody else's problem. As long as I'm getting what I want. It is what people always do. Absalom knows this. Tell them, I'm going to give you what you want. Their loyalty to David goes out the window. It says, the messenger came to David saying, the hearts of the men are with Absalom. He's down in Hebron. David's up in Jerusalem, which isn't really that far away. I think it's like 14 miles, 7 miles, something like that. And he gets wind that, wow, it's turning. I mean, it's whoosh. It's like that. I don't even know if he had a inkling that these things were happening, but down in Hebron, it's all turning.
This is about 20 miles.
Yeah. David said to all of his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, arise and let us flee, for otherwise none of us will escape from Absalom. Go in haste, or he will overtake us quickly and bring down calamity on all of us and strike the city with the edge of the sword. This is all about speed. Absalom needs to get there. Absalom needs to take over, and he needs to do it in one fell swoop. What he does not need is David going establishing himself somewhere else, because Absalom still knows that David has a lot of loyal followers. And whether the Lord means anything to Absalom at this point, I doubt it. He never seeks the Lord. He never invokes the Lord. He uses the Lord as an excuse to go rebel. So there is really not a whole lot of Absalom here that is spiritual. This at this same time, right when this happens, is when Psalms 3 is penned. I'm not sure how to take this, but this is what it says. I mean, you're fleeing from your son who wants to kill you, so you break into song. But here's what it says, and then somebody's writing it down. It says, Psalms 3, 1 through, it's on, it's a very small, it says, a psalm of David when he fled from Absalom, his son. Oh, how my adversaries have increased. Many are rising up against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for God in him. But you, O Lord, are a shield to me, my glory, and the one who lifts my head. I was crying to the Lord with a voice, and he answered me from his holy mountain. I lay down and slept, and I awoke, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000 of people who have set themselves against me around about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for you have smitten all of my enemies on the cheek. You have shattered the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing be upon your people. David has been here before. He's danced this dance before. This is nothing new for him. I'm sure there is a sting that comes with this that is much deeper because it's his son. But he has felt, he has... Oh, by the way, I think this is the only time he really ever flees while he's the king. I mean, he fled Saul, he did it, but once he's king, I think this may be the only time where he turns tail and runs. Everybody else he defeats. I mean, he just faces them and beats them. The king says, they with them and they said, arise, let us flee, and otherwise not us will escape. He says, go in haste, or he will overtake us quickly and bring down calamity on all of us and strike the city with the edge of the sword. So there's two things he's doing here. He knows that there's people in the city that will defend him. So what he's saying is, let's get out of here. We're not only protecting ourselves, we're protecting the people who would defend me. Because it says he will strike the city with the edge of the sword. In other words, he'll kill everybody in here. So David, instead of, he chooses his battle. Let's get out of here. Let's save these folks. Let's save ourselves. And let's not let these people whom I love die at the hand of my son. Let's scoot. Let's skedaddle. The king's servant said to the king, behold, your servants are ready to do whatever my lord the king chooses. This is where you find out who your friends are. When you lose your power, you find out who's your friend because they're your friend, instead of who was your friend because you have some sort of power or you have something they want. So the king went out and all of his household with him, but the king left 10 concubines to keep the house. They're no threat. I mean, he just leaves 10 women behind to take care of business. I've mentioned this before. This becomes important. These 10 women, they mean something. They become extremely symbolic. The king went out and all the people with him and stopped at the last house. Apparently, he's exiting the city, and the last house on the edge of the city, as you head to the Mount of Olives, he stops. Now, all the servants passed on beside him, all the Cherethites, all the Pelethites, and all the Gittites, 600 men who had come with him from Gath, passed on before the king. So all of his loyal people, the foreign bodyguards, are there. His 600 mighty men are with them. And quite honestly, with this group of guys that he has, there isn't many groups that he can't defeat. But he chooses his battles wisely. And by the way, the Gittites are Philistines that came to... probably Philistines that he got to know. Remember when he was living with the Philistine king and he was raiding down there for him and the Philistines wouldn't let him go up and fight the battle where Saul died? These guys probably stayed with him the entire time. And the king said to Ittai, the Gittite, why will you also go with us? Return and remain with the king, for you are a foreigner and also an exile. Return to your own place. You came only yesterday, and shall I today make you wander with us? While I go where I will, return and take back your brothers. Mercy and be truth with you. And Ittai answered the king and said, as the Lord lives, and as my lord the king lives, surely, wherever my lord the king may be, whether it be life or death, there your servant will be. This is cool. This guy has fled his country to come up to be with David. And David says, this isn't your fight. You have no... He's freeing him. He's saying, your allegiance to me, go and serve Absalom. Go back. And if I come back, serve me. Do your job, which is protect the king. He's freeing him. He's saying, look, this isn't your fight. This is a domestic issue. You're not from here. Go do the smart thing. And the dude says, no, man. He says, whether we live or die, I've sworn allegiance. I'm sticking to it. David has some really, he has the cream of the crop. You know, he doesn't have people that are jumping on the wagon because things are good. He has people that stays on the wagon when things are bad. And there aren't many of those, but they are invaluable in your life. You know, in your life, you may have 10 people who will do that and treasure them. Oh, by the way, this guy later in chapter 18, he gets rewarded for this. He ends up running one-third of the army with Joab and Joab's brother, so that's pretty high stuff.
So Joab stayed with him?
Yeah. It gets very convoluted. It gets worse. Then David said to Attiah, "Go and pass over." So Attiah said to the Gittites, "Pass over, and all his men and the little ones are with him." While all the country was weeping with a loud voice, all the people passed over. And the king also passed over the brook of Kidron, and all the people passed over towards the way of the wilderness. In other words, they're scooting out of town. And you could see the hearts of the people were upset. They're crying. This isn't just show. This is just a little valley. I mean, it's when they say river in the Old Testament, it's not like they're like creeks. You know, there really isn't a whole lot to them. And this isn't far from Jerusalem either. This is right outside of town. And behold, Zadok also come. Remember, Zadok's the high priest, and all the Levites with him carrying the Ark of the Covenant. So everybody's coming out to meet Dave. People want to go with him. The high priest shows up with the Ark of the Covenant. We're going with you. You know, when Absalom shows up, there's not going to be anybody there. And then they sent down the Ark of God, and Abiathar came up until all the people had finished passing from the city. And the king said to Zadok, "Return the Ark of God to the city. If I find favor in the sight of the Lord, he will bring me back again and show me both it and its habitation." He's not trusting in the Ark. He's trusting in God. And he says, do the right thing. Keep the Ark where it should be. Dave, for his issues, you can see why God loves David. His faith is so strong. But if he should say thus, I have no... Oh, I think I skipped the page. Nope, no, I didn't. Okay. But if he should say thus, I have no delight in you. Behold, here I am. Let him do to me as he seems good. The king said to Zadok the priest, "Are you not a seer? Return to the city in peace. You and your two sons with you, your son Ahimaaz and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar. See, I am going to wait at the fords in the wilderness until the word comes from you to inform me." So not only is David saying, stay there, take care of the ark, he's going, while you're there, keep your eyes open. David went up and ascended the Mount of Olives and wept as he went, and his head was covered as he walked barefoot, which is a sign of mourning. And all the people were with him, each covered his head, and went up weeping as they went. The covering of the head is not only a sign of warning, it may also be a sign of shame. David may be acknowledging that his sin brought this on. Because like I said, this is all coming rapid fire after Nathan's proclamation. Bad things are coming, Dave. So far, the child has died, his son has been killed, his daughter has been raped, and his son is coming to kill him and take over the throne. These are the things that happened. Now, someone told David, saying that Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. So now David hears that his wisest advisor is on Absalom's side. And David said, "O Lord, I pray, make the counsel of Ahithophel foolishness." He doesn't pray that Ahithophel die. He doesn't pray harm to him. He just says, "Lord, intervene and make his counsel useless." Or better than useless, make it wrong to my favor. It happened as David was coming to the summit where God was worshipped, and behold, Hosea the Archite met him with his coat torn and dust on his head. And David said to him, "If you pass over with me, then you'll be a burden to me. But if you return to the city and say to Absalom, 'I will be your servant, O king, as I have been your father's servant in times past,' so I will now be your servant, and you could thwart the counsel of Ahithophel for me." He said, in other words, this guy wants to go with him. He's an older man. And David said, "Listen, you can't keep up with us, but if you will, go back and serve Absalom and be my inside man." David is still shrewd. I mean, he knows what he's doing. "Are not Zadok and Abiathar the priest with you there?" He said, "I sent them back. Hook up with them. So it shall be that whatever you hear from the king's house, you shall report to Zadok and Abiathar the priest. Behold, their two sons are with them, Ahimaaz, Zadok's son, and Jonathan, Abiathar's son, and by them you shall send me everything you hear." So Hosiah, David's friend, came to the city, and Absalom came into Jerusalem. David, on his way out of town, sets up a network to get information back. It goes from Hosiah to the priest's kids, and then on to David, who I think the priest's kids send women with the message. David does all this on the go, and it turns out to be extremely important. As we look at this, I think it's pretty interesting how quickly this all come about. You don't hear David ever say, "I don't deserve this." You don't hear David calling God evil. David knows. In the next chapter, this, remember we talked about this, a guy comes out and starts to insult him and throw rocks at him and stuff. And one of David's generals says, "Let me go cut his head off." David says, "Nope. If the Lord sent him to do this, then it's my burden to bear." Now, I did point out to you that later on his deathbed, David calls Solomon to his side and says, as he's dying, he goes, "Hey, Solomon, remember that guy that threw rocks at me? Kill him." And he also tells Solomon, "Kill Joab." So, you know, it's, yeah, well, yeah, it's kind of interesting. From Clark's commentary on 2 Samuel, about what happened and how Absalom got where he was, "The hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom," it said, "and it's very difficult to account for the general defection of the people. Here's some of the reasons, and here's some of the ones you wrote. David was old and afflicted, and could not well attend the administration of the justice of the land." So justice. The march goes this way. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. In other words, if things aren't just, people are angry. It does appear that the king did not attend the affairs of state, that there was no properly anointed judges in the land, which they're supposed to be. Joab's power had overgrown. More and more had been delegated to Joab. Joab's doing whatever he wants. He's a wicked and insolent, oppressive to the people. David was afraid to execute the laws against him. Joab had sort of split David's power. Absalom uses that. Joab remains loyal, but because David is not seen as the central power, Joab has assumed some of this. This makes it easier for Absalom to do what he wants to do. There were still some partisans of the house of Saul who thought the crown was not fairly obtained by David. The division never died. You know, think of Europe. Think of the Croats and the Serbs. Think of the different types of Muslims. As soon as we pull out, they kill each other. You know, the Sunni and the Shiites. These divisions are deep. I mean, they are just forever. You can go in and stop them. You know, they could be stopped for 100 years. As soon as the opportunity arises for them to start killing each other, they will. That is still there. Remember, Absalom used that. You're not going to get fair judgment from him. And he's up in the north doing this. David was under the displeasure of the Almighty for his adultery with Bathsheba and the murder of Uriah. And God lets his enemies loose against him. So the biggest problem here was David's sin. All these other factors are true, but never lose sight of the fact that all this is happening because of what David did. And it is a harsh, heavy punishment. He should have been killed. So, I don't know how harsh it actually is, but it said, "There are always troublesome and disaffectionate men in every state and under every government who will never rest and are never hoping for something, and who are ever hoping for some form of a change. It doesn't matter what's in there, I want change." What we would probably call anarchists. They just, whatever's there, I don't like it. I don't care what it is. If what I want gets in there, then I won't like that either. It's part of their makeup. It's part of, this is what I do, this is what I am. Whether there's logic behind it, it doesn't matter. Absalom appeared to be the real and was undisputed heir to the throne. So don't forget that either. Absalom's the dude everybody wants anyway. David could not, in the course of nature, live very long, and most of the people are disposed to hail the beams of the rising, and then exalt those of the setting sun. Which, that's a beautiful phrase. In other words, they're more looking forward, they're forgetting David already, and they're looking for, they want an answer to their problem. Well, what's going to happen when David dies? I need to know, because then I don't have to trust God. I need to see what it is. You know what I mean? And of course, God steps in, and we know it's not Absalom. So we'll end there, and we'll pick up on 16.